We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Coming off a nice win for the Colorado Buffaloes as they knock off the Cal Golden Bears for homecoming last week, 44-28. Welcome into the Buffs Insider weekly podcast, along with Neil Welk of CUBuffs.com on Voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Neil, you look back at a ball game, that was the game we've been wondering. Where are the Buffs going to play a complete ball game, all three phases, and we finally saw it last week, and it was pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you saw the offense come out, move the ball right off the bat. Defense comes out, forces a three and out, gets a punt, gets a turnover in the game. There are just a lot of little things that happen in that game. Offense, defense, special teams play well, energy on the sidelines. And that's, like you said, that's the team we had kind of been expecting to see for most of the year. Showed up in the ninth game of the year, but it's better later than never.
And they've still got a chance now with five wins, of course, to get bowl eligible first time. The Buffs would go to back-to-back bowls since Gary Barnett's last 2 years, 2004-2005. I have made the decision, by the way, that if I see you struggling – putting together a story, I'm going to bench you at halftime because apparently that's the way to do it, and people react. Steven Montez was fantastic last week. That kind of fresh look, if you will, or catching his breath by sitting out and then having to compete for the job last week really seemed to pay dividends.
Yeah, I did. I think it lit a fire under Steven. I think it also made him, you know, take a step back and look and see all the little things that he had been doing wrong. I think he reevaluated a lot of stuff. Trusted in the coaches a little bit more, trusted in the game plan a little bit more, and came out and played, again, like the Steven Montez we thought we were going to see for much of the year, but definitely his best game of the year and arguably the best game of his career.
It's interesting sometimes the way that offensive units will react and, you know, circle the wagons around a guy like that, because I think it wasn't just a Steven thing. I do think he played better. I thought the game plan was fantastic last week. But I think we saw the offensive line, receivers, I think guys kind of circled around Steven a little bit to support him.
No, I think you're right. And I think it was, you know, benching Steven was also a little bit of a, you know, a slap at the entire offense saying, hey, you guys aren't performing well. It wasn't just Steven, but you can't bench the whole offense and open everything up to competition in the ninth week of the season. So, you know, I think they kind of took that to heart and took that as a – you know, a challenge to them. And so the offensive line definitely came back, had probably their best game of the year. They blocked well for the run. They had good pass protection, gave Steven time to throw. And the receivers played well, ran some really nice routes. The deep ball, you know, made an appearance finally again in the ninth week of the season. So all those little things added up. And the defense, you know, kind of matched that fire there early in the first half.
I thought it was interesting on Tuesday at the weekly press conference. Linebacker Rick Gamboa got talking about it. I talked a little bit with Shea Fields about it for our pregame interview for the broadcast tomorrow down at Tempe, about the idea of having fun. And you know, Gary Barnett's always so astute and, I think, perceptive to watching a team. And he's made that comment here the last couple of weeks. It didn't seem to be a football team that was having fun. And they went out last week, played with emotion, seemed to enjoy themselves. Sometimes these kids, I think, kind of forget it's a game they're playing, and they should be enjoying themselves a little bit.
No, and I think, you know, Steven Montez even talked about that, but you're right, Rick, and a lot of the defensive players especially said that they had gotten a little bit uptight and they were worried about too many assignments and doing this and doing something wrong and making a mistake, and they all of a sudden kind of, you know, took a big step back and said, go out there, play to your instincts, play the game, have fun, and make some plays. And as Mike McIntyre said, winning is always a lot of fun. You know, and I think that was a big difference last weekend.
Well, and I wonder a little bit if that's part of the growing process or maturation process of changing the culture, because they did go out and surprise the world a year ago. You win 10 games, and then there's the pressure the next year when you haven't had, I think, continued and consistent success of, holy cow, we got to reach that bar once again. Yeah, I think this might be part of the process of kind of building the program, don't you think?
You know, you might have hit something there that I hadn't really thought about. This team hasn't ever played under pressure before.
None you know, I'm very insightful. You need to listen to me more often.
Once in a while, you know, that blind pig finds that acorn. No, but I think you really hit on something there. This team, none of these kids have played under pressure with being the favorite, under the pressure of being expected to win. Last year, they came from nowhere. They won 10 games, and it wasn't until late in the season that people actually started to believe that Colorado was pretty good. And by then, they had the momentum rolling. But this year, they were supposed to be good from the beginning of the year, and I think maybe – you know, a little of that pressure got to them, and they weren't performing exactly like everybody thought they were early, and maybe it built up. But as you said, they relaxed a little bit last week, went out and had some fun.
You know, and you and I aren't smart enough to figure this out, but one thing Gary talked about a lot during a broadcast, he was real impressed with how the coordinators laid out the game plan last week. And maybe we haven't talked about that enough. What DJ Elliott did and his staff did on the defensive side, what Cheverini and Lindgren and the offensive staff did last week, those guys I thought were very sharp in terms of kind of the game plan they laid out against Cal.
I loved DJ Elliott's game plan last week, and what you saw is you saw Drew Lewis come in from the linebacker spot, not only get some pressure on the quarterback, he finally got that first sack. And then you saw, you know, later in the game, you saw Evan Worthington come in off the nickel position, get that sack. That's what we saw from Chido Bayouzier last year, was Chido coming in out of that nickel spot and getting some sacks, you know, and you saw Worthington do that last week. So I think you're seeing, you know, DJ develop more and more and use those players more, use their abilities and do some different things with those guys. And so they had a good run. They had a good game plan against the run. They stopped the run. They made Cal throw the ball. Offensively, it was the same thing. I thought they did a lot of fun, different things, used the tight end when they needed to, just did some kind of kept Cal on their heels all day.
Yeah, good job by both sets of coordinators on both sides of the ball. I thought the game plan was outstanding. All right, let's go back to the 100-yard kickoff return for Nick Fisher. If you've heard the call, when he came out, I actually said during the play-by-play, why would he bring that out of the end zone? That's one of those great, don't do it, don't do it. Fantastic play. Nice job by you. Huh?
You know, and Nick, as his coaches told him, that came at a point in the game that if he downs it in the end zone, Cal is out of timeouts and the game's over. All he has to do is they go out there and they run the clock out. And it's one of those things. But when you're, you know, that 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, you've got that interception and you look up and go, hey, I could make a play here. And it obviously kind of, you know, got the best of him. But it was one of those plays that everybody's going to remember. You know, 100 yards. You cannot – that's a record that can't be broken in college football, 100-yard interception return. I mean, he has that. He's tied that record now. And so I forgive him for that. I thought it was a lot of fun to watch him do it. And certainly he's going to learn from it.
Yeah. In the NFL, they'll give the yardage in the end zone. In college, they don't do that. So that was probably a 107-108-yard return when it was all said and done. But it goes down as a 100-yard interception return for a touchdown. All right, so now I think the next logical question is, here they're sitting at 5-4, got two wins in Pac-12 conference play. In Tempe this weekend, place they've never won before. Got to come back home. You got an afternoon game against USC, and then, of course, the bye week, and then you wrap it up with the game at Utah. Can this be a springboard? Is this team going to get back to a ball game?
It can be a springboard. You know, I've pretty much given up on trying to predict what this team is going to do. I think I've been wrong just about every week this year. But it can definitely be a springboard. I think they've talked about it this week. This was a little reminder of 2016, you know, remembering what it was like to come with your backs to the wall, play a good game, play well in all three phases, make plays that made the difference in the game. So, yeah, I think this is definitely a springboard. ASU is a team that is good. It's going to be a great test, but certainly not – it's not even the ASU team that we thought we were going to see a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, without question. They're one of these teams that has gotten better, it seems, every week. Early on, and I think the perception was before the season, okay, the two Arizona teams are probably down towards the bottom of the conference. They've obviously both been playing some pretty good football. So they're one of the teams, like we think maybe Colorado is, that might be finding itself here late in the season.
Yeah, Arizona State and Colorado are, you know, two teams that are kind of in the same boat. They're both looking to, you know, to get to a bowl game, make a little noise down the stretch of the season, and this is a big game for ASU. They need a home win. They need to, you know, they need a win to keep trying to get into a bowl. A win puts Colorado into bowl eligibility, and so this is a big game for them. It's a defense that has played very well, did not play well last weekend, and an offense that has a big, powerful running game, and that's the kind of offense that's given Colorado trouble.
Hey, by the way, since we're speaking of the Arizona schools, I'm not sure how many weeks in a row is the ultimate record on any Power 5 conference for a kid to win the Offensive Player of the Week, but can you believe what Khalil Tate continues to do? I mean, we saw the coming out party, and then the next week he had a nice game, and you're like, okay, well, this can't continue. This guy's become like a video game, and he might have, not being a full-time star this entire season, put himself in the Heisman conversation.
Oh, I if he keeps this up, he will definitely be in New York when they invite the Final Five. I just can't imagine him not being there if he keeps this up. Like you said, it's like a video game. Last week he had an 82-yard run, didn't score. They called it back, but they did stop him running other than the 82-yard run, so he threw for 170 and a couple of touchdowns. And the kid is just he's been phenomenal, and nobody yet has figured out how to stop him. That USC-Arizona game is now all of a sudden a very, very big game in the Pac-12 South.
Unbelievable. And here we thought that day when he had the breakout against the Buffaloes that, well, the Buffs weren't very good defensively. Now, they weren't at their best, but obviously didn't realize at the time that they were playing against Superman out there. Colorado's never won in Tempe. You go down there, it's not like they've had a lot of games. They've only played eight times, so ASU's won 7 of the 8. Buffs are of what, 4, I think it is, down at Tempe. That ends up being a very difficult place to play down there, and it's more than just the heat down there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why, but I know that it's tough for a lot. The ASU has a good home record. They play well at home all the time. Part of it, I think, is it's a crowd that is kind of on top of you. It's a big, steep, you know, stadium. They have they have good fans down there, and I think a little bit of it is Todd Graham's defense. He likes to put pressure on you early, and they can shake you out of a game early on, and I think that's what they like to do is cause a few turnovers, cause some mistakes early, and take you out of your game plan, and that's what Colorado's got to be ready for this weekend.
Certainly is going to be a great challenge down there. By the way, it's a 7:07 Mountain Time kickoff on Saturday night. We're going to hit the air on the Colorado Football Network. Yours truly, along with Gary Barnett and Bobby Pesavento at 5 o'clock with the Buffalo Stampede. Before we kind of move on, I want to talk some basketball here today in the Buffs Insider. Last weekend, though, at Folsom Field, great venue, obviously. Nice game, 44-28 victory by the Buffaloes. But you had all the pageantry going on around homecoming last week. You had, you know, Bobby Dick Anderson join us for some pregame stuff. You had that 67 Blue Bonnet Bowl team back. You had the Rashawn retirement of his number 19. You had the Ralphie celebration. That's why you and I love college football right there. What kind of did you take away from the weekend and all the festivities at Folsom Field?
I love the college game. I like it. I like it more than pro football. I loved covering pro football all those years, but I like the college game because I like the pageantry. I like being able to to see the people come back, the homecoming. I love seeing Bobby and Dick Anderson, you know, legends coming back, and people, I saw him talking to people in the stands. It's just that kind of thing. And obviously retiring Rashawn's number, something that I think was very important for the university to do and for the athletic department. So I love the college football game. I like that Saturday afternoon. If it was up to me, every college football game would start at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Yep. And that's what we'd do.
From your mouth to Larry Scott's ears. Let's hope the commissioner agreed with us on that. And by the way, speaking of the Ralphie 50th anniversary and all they're doing around the program right now, we had John Graves on the Buffalo Stampede television show the other day. They're continuing with that fundraiser. And again, if you don't know this, the Ralphie program is totally independently funded. It's not funded by the athletic department. So go to CUBuffs.com, and you can find the links there to donate to the Ralphie program, because what John Graves and that organization are doing is fantastic for the game of college football, specifically University of Colorado. All right, Buffs on the road against Arizona State this weekend. Big ball game, obviously. On Monday night, we got to look at Tad Boyle's basketball team for the first time. They had the exhibition game against the School of Mines at 7 o'clock. And I love the fact that, Tad, what was the phrase he used? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there, which was what? Going back to the Smoking the Bandit song, I think, from years ago. So I love the fact he was quoting that. What was your takeaway, though, from watching the Buffs? They had a 21-point win over the School of Mines, and certainly with a young team, there were some rough spots out there. What was your takeaway?
My takeaway, there's a lot of young talent on that team. You know, I think there's some – I like the senior leadership of George King. I think Dom Collier brought a steadiness to it. Torrey Miller still has his moments inside. But I think that if you're looking at something to hang your hat on, there's a lot of fun young freshmen on that team that showed me a lot. Just little glimpses. I think McKinley Wright's going to be a very good player. I think Tyler Bay has huge upside. I think Deshaun Schwartz showed just a couple of little flashes. Didn't get to see a lot of Lazar Nikolic, but I think he's going to be all right. So I think this is a team that's going to be fun to watch develop as the year goes on, and I think it's going to give Tad Boyle a lot of gray hair. Well, okay.
He doesn't have much hair, so let's not go there. But I will say this, and you know, Tad's one of the reasons I always enjoy Tad is because I always find him to be very objective about his team. He's not painting a picture. He's not trying to hide anything. And I think he had a hit a truism the other night. You know, when that game came down, it was October 30th. It's early. He's got a very young team. There are eight, nine guys have never played a minute for the Buffaloes in a real game. And so he wasn't expecting a masterpiece, I think is the phrase that he used, and certainly he didn't get that. This is going to be a team, though, considering how Tad has coached over the years, where you have seen his teams get better, where this one could make enormous strides as the season goes on, as talented as they are.
Yeah, because there's so much upside to this team, and he's just you can see the difference in the players even now as when fall practice started. And I think this is a team that Tad has already said he's loved. You know, he loves coaching this team. He loves the potential on this team. And you're right. I think this is a team that could develop by, you know, February or March. It could be one that's just going to cause a lot of people in the Pac-12 headaches, because it's a very athletic team, very, you know, a lot of young talent. And I think they could be a lot of fun to watch come February and March.
You know, well, we've been spoiled here in recent years. For 5 years between Josh Scott and Wesley Gordon, there were two big strong, defensive-minded guys in there, and we got used to that. That's going to be a transition point for this team. We got Torrey Miller, who's a veteran, obviously. Dallas Walton is 7 feet tall. He's got great length, but, you know, there's some big bodies he's going to have to learn to defend. Lucas Seward is not necessarily a physical guy. I think he's learning the process there. Tyler Bain, George King might be forced to play a little bit inside. That's going to be an area that I think early on you might see teams – obviously go after that soft center, if you will, against the Buffaloes. I'm interested to see how that group maybe develops and stiffens up inside.
Yeah, and I think you know, with Torrey, he just has not had a ton of playing time in that post. He's always been in there with Josh, or a lot of the times he was in there with Josh or with Wesley, so he wasn't the big post guy in there. He's now that guy in the middle, and he's now the last bastion of defense. Yep. In the middle there, and I think that's a little bit new to him. I think he's still learning it as a senior. The learning curve better go, you know, pretty quickly. But I think he'll be okay in there. But like you said, we got used to having Josh Scott there. We got used to having Wesley Gordon there. If somebody got by one of the guards, we knew that guy was going to be there to stop him. That's not going to be the case this year.
I thought it was interesting. And again, going back to the honesty factor with Tad, he doesn't get into hyperbole very often. And for him to make a comment on Monday night about Tyler Bay being, and correct me if I'm wrong, did he say something along the lines of the most talented player I've had here in Colorado? I mean, you consider all the NBA buffs right now. That's a statement, I thought.
Yes, when he said that he might be the most talented player I've ever coached, I raised my eyebrows there because there have been some pretty good players come through here. Spencer Dinwiddie comes to mind. Andre Roberson comes to mind. Alec Burks comes to mind. Corey Higgins comes to mind. These are guys that Tad coached. But I tell you what, Tyler Bay is long and lean and can run and can do a whole lot of things. He had a sequence the other night where he got a rebound on one end, threw the outlet pass, ran down the floor, took the pass in the lane, took the little hop step and dunked it. And you just looked up and said, man, that young man can play the game. And I think they're looking for that to become a regular occurrence.
He's been compared. I think Tad and his staff compared him to Andre Roberson with a better offensive game and not quite the motor that Andre has got. Having watched him a little bit now, we haven't seen a great deal, but you can kind of see that where he's got a nose for the ball and with a better offensive game could become a dominant player. Now, with that being said, I want to transition over to George King a little bit. George is another guy that's got an NBA body. He's got that kind of ability. They're going to have to lean on him. You like what you see from him kind of as a senior as he's kind of approaching this final season?
You know, I watched him last night, and he was a very calming, steadying influence on the floor. Had the ball in his hands. He played 15 minutes. He scored 13 points. He had 4 rebounds and 2 assists. If you translate that to 30 minutes, I'll take it. You know, if I can get 26 points, 8 rebounds, and 4, 5, 6 assists from George King every night, you know, I think I'd be pretty happy with that. And obviously you can't just double that. But like I said, in 15 minutes, I thought he played a very steady game. When things got a little hectic and he was on the floor, he calmed people down. He's not the point guard, but you could just see he was a little bit of a calming influence. He got in on the boards. He did some things. And so I think George is still growing into that leadership role. It's not something that comes really natural to him, but I do think he will be a good influence on that team, you know, from that perspective this year.
The Buffs have a closed scrimmage on Saturday, and then they open up the season a week from – this is coming out on Friday, a week from today. So on November 10th, the night before the USC game, they open up the campaign against Northern Colorado at 7 o'clock, by the way. We'll hit the air at 6:30 on the Colorado Basketball Network. The CU Women, by the way, they've got an exhibition game on Saturday night, so tomorrow night, versus Colorado Christian. Cross country, real quick here. Last week, the Buffs, Mark Wetmore, took the men's and women's cross country teams up to Springfield, Oregon, just outside of Eugene, and they come away with the individual women's champion in Danny Jones. By the way, early this week, she was named the female athlete of the year in cross country in the Pac-12. Mark Wetmore named the women's coach of the year, and on the men's side, they get a second place finish by Joe Klecker and come in second, and for the first time ever, don't win the Pac-12 Conference Championship. And I thought it was interesting, and this was a great joke, and it just goes to show the level of success that Mark has had. Over the weekend, by the way, the Buffaloes did not have a loss in volleyball, in soccer, in football, in everything. And the joke was, well, Mark Wetmore had the worst weekend in the Buffs athletic department because they didn't win both championships. But it just goes to speak to the level of what Mark Wetmore has done and the level of competition on both the men's and women's side is really fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it was the third straight women's championship. They've now won 4 of 7. And if you add them all up together, there have been 14 Pac-12 championship trophies awarded in cross country. 14 being 7 men and 7 women. Colorado has 10 of those 14, you know, and so I we're going to give Coach Wetmore a little bit of a break. He only finished second in the Pac-12 this year, and actually the men had a great race. The men ran as well as they possibly could have been expected to. Stanford just had a better day, and I just thought it was a great weekend. And Coach Wetmore just continues to produce great runners, great teams. And I don't know if we've ever talked about that before, but maybe we need to hit on that someday. He does it with American runners.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. In fact, he and I did a television stand-up early this week, and he made the point when I was asking about, you know, the men not winning and the women. He said, well, the men actually finished with a lower score than the women did. They won their title. Men did. You know what I was surprised to find out? Joe Klecker finishing second in the men's race was the highest individual finish by a CU man ever. I was stunned to find that out. In the Pac-12, that is. Yeah, they've never had an individual champion, considering the fact they've won six previous titles.
Yeah, they've always gone 3, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They've always had 4 or 5 guys in the top 10 or 3 or 4 in the top 10. But, you know, Stanford just had a great year. I mean, it was they ended up with 41 points, which is exactly what Colorado had last year in winning it. It came down to Colorado and Stanford both years. But, yeah, Joe Klecker had a very nice race, just didn't have enough kick there at the end. I think Colorado men are going to be a factor at the national championships, and I certainly think the women will be a factor at the nationals.
Yeah, I certainly think so. They're off to the regionals, by the way, next week in Logan, Utah, as they'll compete there and they get ready for the nationals, which is what, Louisville, Kentucky, isn't it?
Yep, Louisville, Kentucky.
All right. Well, a lot of going on with the Colorado Athletic Department as we put a wrap on the Buffs Insider this week. Don't forget that football game on Saturday down at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona. We'll get things underway at 5 o'clock, the kickoff between the Buffs and the Sun Devils with Gary Barnett, Bobby Pasavento, and yours truly at 7:07 Mountain Time. For Neil Welk, CUBuffs.com, I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us this week on the Buffs Insider.